You can see it's like time for your pills now, Granny. Stop singing. You got to say something here. Can't put it off forever. Can't sit in the waiting room flicking through the National Geographics. Sooner or later, it'll be the dentist chair for you. All right. You see, what Gary's done, I do stand in awe of, you know, opening the Bible, explaining the Bible, doing that in a way that's winsome and thought through, and I really admire that. And I love sitting under that, and that's probably not exactly what I'm doing today. In fact, I'd like to think that the word's informing what I'm saying, but it's not like, here's the verses about teaching children sin and death and heaven and hell, and now let's take it one verse at a time there. It's much more freeform than that. You won't be surprised to hear. So sin and death. I thought, you know, happy days, come to our children's conference, talk on sin and death, heaven and hell. And I just started sort of reflecting on, okay, well, what do we make of that? These are some observations. They're not the gospel, but they're parts of the gospel. They're like the flour and the water and the eggs and the yeast that are in a loaf of bread. I don't know if there are eggs and bread, but, you know, they're the parts of a recipe, if you like. They're the building site, and then timber and the tiles are delivered. They're the components of what's going to be built. So there's value in understanding, you know, the difference between a piece of 4x2 and a tile, between flour and sugar. And that's helpful, but you may better understand the whole as a result by studying those individual parts. But if I'm going to teach them, I'm going to need to understand them in my own life to my own satisfaction if I look at those components individually. And I did a little individual brainstorm. I don't know whether it would work now, I'll explain what I did. I just thought, sin, what comes to mind? Just brainstorm. And so I self-brainstormed. Maybe that's easy because there's... But I thought of Romans 6:23, the wages of sin is death. Yeah, it just sprung to mind. Again, if you don't know what that is, sorry. The albums are available later. You don't ever need to feel like this again. It's up to you. I know what I'd be doing. And I'm standing at a lectern. So that's got to count for something. Okay, so sin. Romans 6:23. I am a sinner. My sins are forgiven. Christ died for sin. Sin came through Adam. God punishes sin. Sin is crouching. That's something that it's present. God said that to Cain. All have sinned. There's no one righteous. I hate sin, and I love sin. You know, to be honest, that's the dilemma of sin. I'm not trying to give a total theology of sin, but I'm just saying these are all their thing. It's a collage, isn't it? What we believe. Death. God died in Christ. That's just an arresting thought, that a person of the Godhead tasted death. Death came by sin. Death is God's judgment on disobedience. Death is universal to humanity. Everyone is going to die. I will die an earthly death. Death is defeated. Death will have an end. I don't need to fear death, but I do fear death. When Jesus faced death and decay, he said, I'm the resurrection and the life. Death is never theoretical. But you could say that about any theology, really, couldn't you? But death is never theoretical. Hell. I hope this is helpful, because I'm just trying to say, you may not have the, you know, definitive belief on, it's just interesting to be self-aware about what you actually think about these things. And that's, it's all right. I mean, under my theology of death, I'd say Con Smithers. It's the first dead body I ever saw my father-in-law. you know, that's part of, that's death, that's under that heading. Hell. Jesus taught about hell and judgment. Hell scared me as a child. Hell is the vacuum of gracelessness. That's just me being poetic, but I wonder what the theologians would make of that. Hell is the vacuum of gracelessness. Think about that, principal man. he is thinking about it. Hell is the domain. Do you want me to say it again? Not that sort of vacuum. Hell is the domain and destiny of Satan. Hell is eternal. Hell is a strong dynamic in the triumph of the Lamb. So when at the end of the Bible, I think, isn't that interesting? There's the triumph, but hell's right there. That's part of the triumph is what hell sorts. Hell confronts materialistic secularism. The devil and hell is heavy with myth and misconception. Just in our culture, isn't it? It's that hell is... Well, it's, how is the game today? Hell is hell, you know? It's really hell out there. Oh, my dad talked about when he was in the war and he said it was hell, you know? It's they're having chemo. They're just going through hell at the moment. He's depressed. Every day is hell, you know? There's... to say nothing of... You know, now we're coming up to Halloween, and that throws a whole... heaven, I'll be a bit quicker here. Hope-filled, Christ-won, can't read my own writing, God-ruled, life-filled, death-less, sin-less, eternal, joy without qualification, God's people gathered, every tribe and tongue singing, celebrating, sobered and sweetened by judgment, knowing that... The problems aren't going to creep back in when no one's looking. A beautiful yearning, especially in the sick and the frail and the dying. Maybe you know stories like that where heaven starts to... Anyway, that's not me expounding passages. That's the sort of... I'm wearing the post-it notes of that I've picked up from sermons and life and reading and scripture. It's not exhaustive, but that's, I think, for all of us, we have some understanding, and it's good to be self-aware of that. Perhaps you'd say, wow, I didn't get many of those, and maybe that says something about, you know, learning more, and maybe you might say, wow, he's really missed, you know, vast chunks, and that says something about my need to keep learning. But if you take the components of what we're talking about, we still have the MasterChef mystery box, don't we? It's the mystery box challenge. It's there are those components sitting on the table. What we need to explain them, and we need to fit them into the gospel story. My son, it's a sad moment at home because we're packing the Lego up. He's 17. He's going to do his HSC. So the Lego's going in the roof. And the thing that was great when Lego arrived, you know, you'd get the new kit, pull it out. It still amazes me that all the parts are there, how they have a factory that can do that. And can I somehow turn that into a medication that I can take? So I do everything that I should and all the parts fit together. But lots of parts get explained in the fitting together. So when you just lay it out before you get the instructions, you'd go, what is that? It's just interesting. Some parts are hidden. Some parts are structural. Some parts are cosmetic. You could lose some bits and the Millennium Falcon would still hang together when you finally build it. Or other bits, you lose them and it's kaput. And you've just got a pile of very expensive bricks. And they are expensive. I'm hoping that, you know, in 25 years' time, eBay, he cleans up. And if he doesn't, they'll be in my roof, so I'll be able to go and go. So the exercise of thinking about your encounter with the doctrines may highlight your need to study, which is what I've just said. I would say don't go... And I'm not criticising VeggieTales, but if you want to understand sin and death or heaven and hell, or you want to understand the story of Esther, you could just watch the VeggieTales Esther video. Or you could go to the picture Bible because you think, well, I'm working for kids. And I'm not saying that would be unhelpful necessarily. But I guess through today, I'm going to call you to go do some... If you're going to pitch what you do to kids at their age and stage, why don't you pitch your preparation and what you understand to your age and stage and your level? So just be developmentally appropriate for yourself. So head to the New Bible Dictionary. That's a really handy reference, you know, and you just look up sin and you're only going to read, well, that's probably a couple of pages. But, you know, there'll be things there where you think, oh, holiness. Oh, and there's, you know, a couple of, I'm picking another big one really, aren't I? But, you know, a page or two, you could read it and just get some biblical input, some theological peripheral vision to it, build up your patchwork. You do a simple word study when you just, you know, at the back of most Bibles there's a concordance, so look up sin and just, you know, I'll pick that one and I'll pick that one, and then you find the nuance of sin that, you know, it's sometimes personal and it's sometimes universal and other times it's just a story in it. It's brutal and sometimes it's a struggle, sometimes it's resolved in judgment. So a little simple word study is helpful. Or just ask a brother or sister, because I find the grappling is one of the great gifts of the people of God. When I've had friends and I can just talk to a friend and grapple through, and if you don't, you know, like questions that you might have, I probably don't have to think, like, what do I... I don't know. Just if you've got a lingering question about hell that you think, I've never really got the answer to that, well, go and talk about it. And what you'll find is you may not answer that question, but it'll bleed into your understanding, and the understanding of a brother or sister will leach into you. So, but I think it's helpful to know where they stand on the spectrum. So, you know, speaking to someone who you think, yeah, they're going to have thought this through. That's a good way to just, get, you know, build your, strengthen your theological understanding. At Gary and Fiona's place, they've got two stoves. They must be very rich. They're paying them too much at QTC. They have two stoves in their kitchen. One is, I'm not sure what brand it is. Is it Smeg? Let's say it's Smeg. One's a Smeg and the other is Little Tykes. I think a lot of people think that children's ministry is Little Tykes. And we'll leave the big stove with the real gas to all the grown-up people, the serious Bible teachers. And that's not it. I think of it as pediatrics. You wouldn't send your pediatricians to TAFE and your doctors... No offense to TAFE. But you're not touching my kids. And then you send you know, 8 years for your real doctor. And you administer the same medications, you know, in children's ministry. It's the same antidote that you rely on for your own spiritual life as well. And I guess that's the other dimension, isn't it? That there is no place in Little Tyke's death, you know, Fisher Price heaven, Wiggles hell. Yeah. So what do? You go to, you say, 5-year-olds, here's a book by a man who lived a very long time ago. His name was John Owen. He was a very special friend to a man called Cromwell. And so you pull out Mortification of Sin. So is that what you do? Well, I think no and yes, because Owen may just unlock your understanding and arrest you with... And if that sounds too scary, Puritan books always sounded scary to me, and the covers, they made sure that they would scare me off with etchings and pictures of statues. And I thought, well, that's, you know, whereas, you know... Philip Yancey books are much more, you know, oh, that doesn't look scary, so scary. But I've found great encouragement in a lot of books written, you know, hundreds of years ago, and you may be surprised, but even if you just read a section or ask a friend who you know say, where's a good spot in Owen's Mortification of Sin? I may not read it all, but that's a classic. Like that's lived for hundreds of years. If you want to understand sin, that's a book that people keep reading. You know, they're going to be singing Crocodile Song in 400 years. I don't think so. I think what something like that will do, and it doesn't need to be John Owen, but if you encounter sin in its realness, you know, as a dynamic theology, then how you talk to your five-year-olds, because there's what you say and there's the activities and then there's that thing that they can tell about what this means to you, and that's something that you build authentically. You can't fake that. Well, I guess you know, that's what acting is, isn't it? But you don't want to do that. You want to be real. A friend of mine said that her dad, he's a fantastic, no longer with us, but Christian man, and just a great example to us as a family growing up. And they did Santa Claus in their house, and you know, the presents and everything. And any children here? Anyway, I won't give the game away just in case. Karen used to like to say, I could always tell that the way Dad talked about Santa and the way Dad talked about Jesus was completely different. There was a tone that, so even though he'd say, you better go to bed because, you know, Santa's coming and, you know, and there's, oh, what did Santa bring you? He didn't, they were by no means, the tone was completely different, even though he didn't give the game away. John Owen said, a man will only preach well to others that which preaches itself to his own soul. So teach yourself and be taught. Don't be surprised that your lesson to seven-year-olds could be a breakthrough in your own understanding of whatever it is that you're teaching. So when it comes to kids, do you build the Lego? Like, do you give them the Millennium Falcon, everything delivered, or do you teach the pieces? And I do think you can do both. But the order you do them might change. You know, 9-year-old kids and 10-year-olds, you might think it'd be good to linger. These kids like to ask questions. So I'll linger a little and let them respond and probe their understanding. You know, maybe while they're colouring in or doing something else so it's not just like question time. 9-year-olds. My world is really different to, I think, you know, in terms of my ministry to kids, to the sort of ministry world that you guys would be in. It's if I'm writing a song, I'm getting 2 or 3 minutes, you know, 2 or 3 minutes worth of truth. And this is where something that's really important to me, which is required in the process, if you're going to educate yourself, the process of distillation. So I think a lot of children's ministry risks diluting, but the difference is that truth can be concentrated, not diminished, and that takes a lot of thought. And you know, that little drop of truth, plop, out the end of the big tubes that finally, aha, there it is. That's not an easy thing to get. But I find that's really important for a song. I heard a song, I won't say whose, but it sort of had helping with the washing of the dishes and heaven and hell, and it was almost like the Bible dictionary had been sort of shredded. And we'll just use that one. So it was like 3 minutes, but it was just, okay, if you want to do a song about the dishes, we'll just do the dishes. And then we can leave sort of some of these other things for another song, because there will be another song. It takes a respect of those truths, I think, to do that. There's a quote that from a book that I found really, really helpful. I don't know whether Principal Man, would you recommend that book to a group of gathered? And I'm, you haven't read it? Thought you'd read everything, mate. Everything. This is Cheat's book. David Wells wrote 3 or 4 books that were his sort of critique. Sounds a bit negative, but let's say critique. Of of sort of current practice in the church, in the current culture. And I never read any of them, although I own one. And then he brought out a summary book. Aha, I can save lots of time by reading his book that, you know, I've thought it all through, he said, and I feel like this is an encapsulation of those books and my current thought on it, and it was shorter. So I thought, well, that'll do me. And this is something, it's really helpful in terms of thinking about what happens in churches. He's got a big heart for the church, and he's got a big heart for theology. But one of the things that I read here is, in gearing church life around this principle, which is branding, marketing, evangelicals have taken the gospel's simplicity, taken up the gospel's simplicity, and because they affirm that, have felt that they could walk away from its profundity. In its biblical setting, though, the gospel does not give us a choice between simplicity and its profundity. It's both. It's both so simple that everyone can understand it, and so profound that none can fully plumb its depths. It is this matchless combination of simplicity and profundity that has preserved, that has to be preserved if Christian faith in its biblical fullness is to be preserved. Those evangelicals who took its simplicity and abandoned its profundity are now finding that Christian faith itself is beginning to crumble in their hands. So we've got a vested interest in the next generation and their understanding of their faith, that this is not something that will crumble in their hands, that we've distilled, that you can actually expand what you've learned as a child rather than, well, that's it. It's weak cordial. That's an interesting... weak cordial is such a, you know... That's in, you know... There's an illustration. How many glasses of weak cordial have you had after church? I mean, if you grew up in churches. And I did all this time, I didn't realise I was drinking a metaphor for... I didn't just realise now. Yeah. Oh, sorry, I didn't say it. It's called The Courage to be Protestant, which is a curious title. You know, because when my friend recommended, he said, brilliant, you know, and I thought, it sort of sounds like Why I'm Not a Catholic, you know, that's what it sounds like. And its subtitle is Truth Lovers, Marketers and Emergence in the Postmodern World. So what was the first book Colin recommended at the Children's Ministry Day? I really enjoyed that book. It's one of the best books I've read in recent times. And whether that's a reflection of me or not, it's I don't find it's inaccessible, and he makes some really sharp points. But, you know, look, if you don't enjoy it, I'm sorry. But it's not a chin scratcher, you know. It's a dynamic book about biblical faith. So I create 3-minute songs and very long talks. Sometimes I'll do a sermon or a kids seminar, and that involves not only the distillation process, but that's a bit more how do you link the bits together. And maybe you've been asked, we need a half hour service or a Christmas at where I go to church. It's a Christmas Eve service, so it's linking the bits together. It's not really a service though. It's a show essentially, and that's a little like what I do when I do my kids performing. So it's a sort of special event. That's why I say I'm not a great example, because if I do my concert, I spent weeks working out how do the songs from this new album fit into a show, and the dynamics that are. It's not just the themes that need to fit together, although they do, and it's not just the sort of thrust of, well, what will people walk out with, but it's also, will I lose them? You know, so you've got the dynamic of where, how do we keep the interest maintained? So there is an element of entertainment in it that I don't think you need to be ashamed of. Just be aware of and know that that's not the ultimate point of it. I'm not quite sure where my mind was going on this, so I'm just talking about the different applications, and then there's kids talks as well, the classic 4 or 5 minute kids talk, and then perhaps your scripture class. The kids' talk is sort of built out, borrowed from the passage that might be preached. That's how often I've found. And then you just pick that one point that you want to get out of that and sing a song at the end that fits the theme. And then there's your scripture class, which is often built off curriculum, isn't it? And that can be a challenge sometimes if you don't like the curriculum, isn't it? Do you rewrite it, or is it bland, or how do you? I often find it's just I'm a bit of a kitten with a ball of wool creatively. I don't know whether you're like that. Where if you're given if they've just got a blank page, sometimes that's hard to come up with something. Whereas if you just say here's a really lame piece of curriculum about sin or about kindness, you go okay. Now I've got something to go with. I'll bolt something onto this. Not necessarily, a food fight or, how can I bolt theology into this so that this will serve them well, so I'll be a good paediatrician. I've got a little, there's a little handout which you don't need to look at, but I've tried to just, again, it looks a bit like promotion in the end, doesn't it? But it's, I was a librarian for a little while and I tried to classify my songs that talked about, some had sin, sin, death, heaven, and hell. They touch it. It's interesting. There's a couple that straddle the two, and I did it by albums, and then later today, there's the fruit of the spirit, and I think, and just it was a good process for me because looking at like Fiona said, you don't shy away, and so just sort of revisiting what songs touch on and where they go, and. I think part of what the music does is it brings that matter-of-factness that I was mentioning before to Fiona, that when you get used to hearing words, they're familiar with the words of sin and death and heaven and hell, but they're also start to get familiar with the concepts as well built into these songs. As I was looking at lyrics and thinking, well, what do I do in the process of this? I think there's always a strong guy rope into the gospel, so you don't just teach them in isolation. I think generally there's you're guy roping back. This is not just a bag of grey blocks. This is part of the Millennium Falcon. Even in the box that's going in the roof, it's it's still part of the set. And I think having a respect for those components that this is the life-giving gospel. I love standing on stage and singing a song where I just think if that I can sing in the truth of a song. Maybe it's a song I've sung many times, but I like the process of forcing myself back into the truth of that song. So I don't know, we're waving flags. The Lord is King. He's going to look after everything. I'm thinking, here's all these people. Who knows? There's a little boy like in Lonnie. Their stories are so broad. Who knows who, mum's come from chemo to take the kids to the show and she might make it all the way through. The Lord is King. He's going to look after everything. Re-entering the sort of truth of that for whoever may be hearing it and re-entering that for myself. So I think he is going to look after everything. I don't, the uncertainties, the trifling uncertainties that might have been, Robin, what'd you ring me now? I'm about to go on stage. That might seem like a trifle. The Lord is King. He's going to look after everything. What was I trying to get? Was I trying to get out of her, oh, Colin, you're about to go on stage. Wonderful, And I needed her to just, sit at my feet, on the phone and just, be something that I was desiring there. Or was I being nasty to her? But the Lord is King. He's going to look after everything. Whatever. There's a greater desire that I need to replace that desire for whatever it was that trifled me, sort of traffic jam trifling trial. But then I don't know where my health and my life and my, my future's safe with the Lord. So entering into the truth of what you're saying. I'm really conscious of how time is going here. So let your soul be comforted. You eat at the restaurant that you're taking the kids to. So, I'm probably spoiling this one right now, but better to say one thing well and leave the things that you could have said for another time. I've sort of said that. I did a little brainstorm of myself, and it's probably a bit like what I did before, sin, where I said all those things, and you think, okay, just a little more theologically, I drew all these arrows into sin, and there's so many options. So if you've got a gig on sin, maybe that says, I can't do it in a week. Or maybe it's just say, okay, well, what can I say out of that? If I just get one shot, what's the one that I want to give them? And it's not going to cover it all. So either pick one, or I thought, pick cousins. You know, pick truths that are cousins, if you know what I mean. If you're picking rebellion, then perhaps you're going to pick relationships next to that, and the effect, maybe that'll throw you into an Old Testament story, perhaps. Or if you're going to sin solution, maybe you could center on the cross, or you could or you might be talking about sin's ultimate demise. So there might be cousin sins there. If it's just sins of omission and commission, then it's the inside and the outside and the heart, and that's sin as well. And so just grab a few adjacent sins so that there's still a bit of sharpness to your themes. I wonder whether, a little test of what we've done is what are they leaving and saying? Someone tweeted last week, it was really lovely. Daughter jumps out of car. I only got 147 characters here, so. Daughter jumps out of car, slams door, walks to school singing, go, go, go in the gospel power. Thanks, Colin. It's just nice. And I thought, what's in our heads? It's part of the reason why I wrote Isaiah 53:6, actually, because the kids were singing hair, shampoo commercials or Macca's commercials in a playground at the Christian school. And I thought, wonder if we can get them singing something all right. Okay, and that's, so what do they leave singing? And it's just interesting, maybe you've had this experience where kids pop out questions and it shows what's going on in there. Or they pop out a truth. Mum's crying. Mummy, God never says oops, for instance. I mean, I'm picking my song, you know what? Because it's pediatrics, maybe that's exactly what Mum needs to hear. And it's not kids being uppity, it's just truth. Embrace the kingdom of God like a child. And I love that people have often said, we're pushing the pram through Westfield, and my three-year-old's yelling out, sin's like a crocodile! 10-9-8, God is great!
It's lovely.
I mentioned it before, and I can't go back to it, but Matthew 21:12-17 is a great example of the grown-up chaos. Like, he's going into the temple, so he's risking his life there, and he's just going right into the face of, he's spray-painting the gospel. He's hacking the Sydney Morning Herald website and going, Christ is king, get used to it. Across the front, and it's like, okay, what happens now? And the the Pharisees are disgusted by the children. Do you hear what these children are saying? And Jesus responds by saying, it's just like it was written. This is exactly, you should have been expecting it. Revelation pointed to this. I think what I had thought about, and I don't really have time for, but I could knock it up maybe, is a hypothetical seminar. Okay, you've got to do a seminar on sin and death, heaven and hell. What'll it be? And I came up with this sort of Beryl's balloon bunches delivery, and Barry was working for Beryl with some water bomb balloons. That he delivered, and Beryl's told me, don't go too close to cactuses and don't push any pins near it, and deliver these to Bruce, and he pops one and he sees a cactus and it pops, and in the end there's these sort of droopy dead balloons, and then it's like, yeah, hello, Beryl's coming, oh my goodness, and sort of Beryl solves the problem but by underlining the fact that this is exactly what I told you, not what you shouldn't do, and that Beryl's, you know, I could forget it, I could just forget it, but then there's still, whether you've got the problem with the dead balloons, and Barry's expecting balloons, or I could punish you, and I'd be quite entitled to punish you because you did exactly what I didn't say. I'd sack you, and you'd never work for me again, and we won't be friends. Or I could forgive you, but we'd still have the problem of the balloons. Like, that's going to cost something to me. And okay, that's a nutshell. But that's an example of a morphing idea. It might end up being a flower delivery, or it might be, you know, it could go anywhere. But that was me setting myself just a little hypothetical. Okay, let me finish this. Children, the Pharisees said, "Did you hear what these children are saying?" they asked him. "Yes," Jesus replied. "Have you never read?" Of course they'd read it. "Have you never read? From the lips of children and infants, you, Lord, have called forth your praise." Like, real praise. Not kiddie praise, Wiggles praise, you know. Plastic praise doesn't really work. It doesn't need to work. It's just toy. But praise of the Almighty from the lips of children and infants. And what a blessing to think that in the way that you've encountered that truth, in the way that you've praised your God and sought his honour, that you could in turn exhort children, teach children, nurture children, so that the words of praise would come from their lips and a heart of praise would rise to him in fulfilment of those great words. I'm over time. Alas, our time is gone. Although Gary did go about 10 minutes over, so